Mr. Donnelly, reel two. Now, we got to the point where you'd gone down to Aldershot early in 1940, mm-hmm. and then you weren't there long, only a few weeks, and you were moved on.
Yeah, we went to a little place called Runfold.
Runfold. And is that near Farnham? Because some Farnham. Of the men say Farnham, no, but it would be that's what they mean. And where were you billeted there?
My large house, or the big mansion, was for me. The big driveway up to the quarry behind it.
And what sort of thing were you doing at Runfold?
Very little, because no vehicles again. But one thing that sticks in my mind was we were told by a site agent we were getting a new anti-tank gun. And we were going to fire it for the first time the following day. To be very careful, it's a harder kit than a free ocean rifle. So with the firing to this quarry, a petrol tin, and we were grasping this .5 rifle.
Would that be the boys?
Boys, anti-tank gun, yeah. We fired this thing, and honestly, I didn't see any hand in the rifle. That was what we call it in the rifle, I think we know that. And that was your anti-tank gun, and honestly, it wouldn't have penetrated anything. Bring gun car, I don't think. And I'm supposed to be your anti-tank gun. I don't think. So, that was it. And then, after we saw that, then I think we got told they were going to...
Hang on. While they were... I forgot to mention, while they were at Aldershot, they're supposed to have found a tank in the coal shed while they were at Aldershot that had been dumped in the, you know, in the coal shed, buried with coal. Do you remember anything like that?
No.
Okay. Anything else before you leave Runfold? Any other sort of training you remember?
No.
Still no vehicles?
No. You weren't in my cars or anything at all.
So, what happened next then?
Then we were told that all the young lads were leaving, to leave because they were thinking about France, and they went up north as the very first thing they going to do. There were two regiments to cross those hours and the North Hampshire. So, all of us, I think there were about, in my squadron, there were about 17.
You were still underage for going abroad.
Yeah.
And did you have any choice to where you were going?
No, not sure.
How did you feel about leaving the unit?
Didn't like at all, because the fact being that was a problem, that's why I kept on to stay with them. But then again, you see, and they told us, well, you're too young, you can't go overseas. But and I couldn't say, well, I'm 18, because they knew my age, you see. The divulged us in 1939, and I stayed on because I didn't want to come out. Great choice, I just had to go to Gloucester Hussars.
So, now where were the Gloucester Hussars?
Well, we were at Market Harbour.
And how were you received? Which squadron did you go to?
I think it was this squadron. I don't know where I went to, didn't you?
And what? How were you received into them? How did they receive you?
Well, we just went down and I arrived at HQ and they told us what squadron we were to go to. And I went to my car along with 2 hours. And the lads were all right. I mean, they were next to them, okay. And as I say, this chef came out. He made a head of a Scotsman. He wanted to know if we were going to the officer's mess for him. He looked at us. And okay, so we went in there. And... he said, we're going to send me away on a cookery course. So, yes, I did go, and because there was nothing to do there either. I mean, the plenty of food, but we were good to know us about that thing. So I went on a cookery course to Cowley in Oxford, to the camp.
What do you remember of the cookery course?
Well, it was very good. I really enjoyed it. And one of the things was, whilst we were there, the Dunkirk veterans were coming back from Dunkirk.
So you'd gone in about May,
mm-hmm.
And these veterans would start coming back at the end of May, early June.
All day and night you were fine. Beating eggs, and all these people would come, probably a big cookery place, you see, and they would come in their hundreds. And they would day and night, but they keep these guys when they come back from Dunkirk.
And what state were they in?
Well, some had no guns, and no arms, none at all. Some were kind of bottle weary, I think, you know. We felt proud of them, you know, the fact when you get them to come back with no guns and nothing. We're lucky to get away from them, you know, and the Navy did a great job there. So maybe fishing boats with all around across the bottom of the river. But we worked day and night to help these animals to feed them. And then they were moved on to various places as well. You see, they passed through for food at night. And I wrote a book of port and I went back to the regiment and put me in the officer's mess, which I didn't like.
Now, what was your job in the officer's mess?
Cook, chef, cook in the officer's mess. And I didn't like it.
Now, was that a squadron mess or the...
Squadron.
So what was your job? What was... Can you tell us what a typical day would be like as a cook in the officer's mess?
In the morning, right? And you had your little cooker stoves, you know, the boys and bunnies and whatnot. You had to make breakfast for the officers. And then you had the orderlies who came into the dining room, at the dining room there. And the officer cooked for them. And the mess waiters. The officers were quite good, but the rashes, you know what I mean? They were elaborate, I mean. We were the top, when we went on a cooking course, we went at a bare minimum. But these people were getting the blind stuff himself. You know? And the chef, they wanted it to serve up to the chef. And they were already taught for that kind of work. You know, when you start to eat troops, you know, you look to an oven in open air, and all this carry on, you know, and we were earth and all this. This is what the other ones, but the chef really wanted. So I stuck it for a week for it, and I said, oh no, I said, I can't stay this anymore. I mean, this is getting me nowhere. So I was going with my girlfriend, and I had been down there, and so my sister was getting married. Now we were in a wood, and the house, the farmhouse was here, it was about 100 yards away from it. This was really dense. And I must have sat me down when we get out for a late pass because of the wedding reception in the pub, little pub in the village. And they were supposed to be in for 10 o'clock. He said, well, I see, I come back, I said, no one is going to see you here. You know, anyway, but I said, okay. So the wedding went all right, went up to the pub, I had a drink up there, and it went back to the house. And I had a nice thing in the house. And the rope was only 100 yards from the girl, said, you going up? I said, it's just after 10. I said, oh, no. And I passed the sentry, not to know if it was McLean. I heard the door, the officer not coming to see me, didn't know who it was. We asked the sentry, and I don't believe it was in the sentry, I had to tell him who it was. Put it over my plate in front of this corridor with the babe. And it was Major Hicks Beach, and I forget, he was a prominent PC that day, where he stuck. We were there, and called anybody to us, and I said, I don't know what I disobeyed his or. He said, oh, he said, I'll give you 14 days. He couldn't get sitting out about 14 days, 2 weeks. And he said, and the Pundi space shop, well, right enough, it was 12 o'clock, and the Pundi space shop. He said, and well, when do you get your leave? Well, at that time, we only got leave every, a leave pass every 6 months. The girls we got down to Fremont, we had 6 months at that time. He said, what, I'm actually on 3 or 4 months now. He said, oh, could you stop now? Right, so I was back to the end. So my two mates were excited, so well, how's your run? So I said, oh, it's kind of rough. I'm the first sergeant in the army. Oh, come on, this is fair. So she was sat in the canteen, in a big building, and told them that we wanted to transfer to the first regiment overseas. That was it, we put in there. And the next one is, so I'm going to come in the next one. Done it. Wanted this thing, can't see it. It's quite a 10 o'clock. You've got all the CCA team, you've got barbers and whatnot. But I think boy, this thing, this is a conspiracy. The three letters you see, and the new bangles. I said, no, I said, I wrote more letters, but I didn't get that too. He said, well, we've got to switch it. In fact, they come out at 11 o'clock. You know? So, I don't know what happened to the other two, but I said, I'm trying to come out. So, come out with them. And it had to be dismayed. He said, what you've been doing is what I told him. He said, this is my first size. I've got kind of hefty losing at least 14 days CB, 1 day's pre stop, and then consider what you're waiting for the day. He said, so your day's pre, he said, you won't be stopped. He you see, but and we still want to go to space. Because we have, life will be hell after this, I think it will be anyway. So I said, well, I'm going over to see you, he said, but you can't come with me, he said, but I'm going to see you. But he said, if you're keen to go, he said, I can get you to go up to join a draft at Catholic. Up there, if you want. I said, I have a right. He said, you'll be going away tomorrow to join the draft at Catholic. Okay. So I came back, my little teammate, he's got time, he's got CBs in there. So, however, I went up to Catholic.
Now, just before you leave the Gloucesters, you were in the second line Gloucesters then, were you? Because you said
no, Gloucesters.
It was the first Gloucesters, right. So you just asked for active service?
When?
Well, with that, I mean, when you went to the colonel, you weren't asking to go up the first line, you were just asked to go overseas.
Asked to go, yes.
Not to join the first line, yeah.
No, in the first line, not to join it.
And the other point is, the attitude of the officers, you told me off tape, there's a couple of incidents, one about beagling, another about when they said drafts and things. Could you tell us those two stories, because they're both interesting.
This, when we first arrived, this Scots sergeant was a sheriff, he was a very good sheriff, he was a first class sheriff. And he said, I'll take you in the harness, he said, I'll look after you. The food was great there, lovely food. I was helping him and the other two of us were mess with us. So, all right, one day, he said, I looked at him, tomorrow morning, he said, we're going out with the beagles. I said, beagles? He said, I'm not looking at my car. He said, I'm a car, I said, no, no, that's not how he said, you'll see what I have in the morning. I said, okay, no, I said, what the hell can it be? So we got next door with PT kit, and I went down there, was there, there's a very pack of dogs, and I said, what is that? He said, we had the beagles. I said, no, I didn't know what beagle was at that time in my life. So I said, well, just get this with the dogs. Get all these other horses, whatnot. You know, the real cavalry. I mean, there's still horses. So I was taking them.
And what were you doing? What did they want you for?
Taking them for an exercise. Yeah, that's where a PT kit was around. We had dogs at the field standing there. Well, from back and said, this is no Bobby engine. And no vehicle at all. Not a vehicle at all. We need to go get a bus. So the following week, he said, well, lad, it's a trace of milk we're going to do today. He said, go to the few stores and get a pair of gauntlet gloves. We're going to get a gala nails. I said, for what? He said, gala nails. I'm sure we're going to get a gauntlet gloves. And this time, maybe, you know, there was a blister, you know, it starts with a blister. And we got bags and bags of these things, you know, and I thought, what the hell? Then we go back and we put them in, and I bought the soya stove, and you know, you screw them down and you put water on them. This we've got a spinach he was making, these bloody nails. And we tell you about the water, and when it was all cooked, this we don't land in the water, you know, we were stuck and everything was in. So I said, well, that's enough for me.
And what was
it? It's like the officers, it's true. So I finished the water, this is here, like a spinach. I don't touch the name.
And the other story was when they. About them saying Gloucesters, ours, and others. Could you tell that story as well?
Yeah, when we arrived there, we were told that they had only going to go take a bus. And all squadrons, all four squadrons, they were in different places. They met in Northampton at a big cinema where the colonel addressed them all to let them know what was going on, what was happening, where we were going to get vehicles, what they were doing. So we went up and first thing they had was the address that they come on at the stage and they sent to another world boss this year, of course. And I don't think that an uncle says. Now we were joined the Gloucesters, and we were, it didn't look very well to us anyway. I mean, I mean the bad side of it, but I mean, why did they be posting at all? Well, we just, you know, we more as just arrived at me, but nobody did the reason why we were lucky to come here.
Had you stayed in the cookhouse long, you know, because you were a bit, there's a bit of confusion about how long you were with the Gloucesters. You joined them in May, roughly, 40, and you seem to have gone overseas in January 42, so there's a sort of full year with the Gloucesters.
Yeah.
Why did you didn't stay in the cookhouse long because you got fed up of the fancy cooking. So what happened then?
Then I was put back into the squadron. And then we did quite a lot of maneuvers, but we travelled on a three-ton vehicle. we did quite a lot of it because I remember now we got told at that time we were the only armoured division in the south of England. And if the Germans had invaded, well, we were the only, although we were in Estland, we were the tanks there, we had tanks, you know, but I wasn't in the tank.
They'd got tanks by then, right?
But yeah, we just got these tanks.
And they were which tanks?
The Crusaders. And when we first got them, I remember we went down to see them. And we had an officer named Lord Ashton of Hyde. He was a Scott leader. And he was a nice lad. No, he was his second command. Lord Ashton of Hyde, we called him Happy Harry. And he used to come down to his tent in the morning with a driver group and whatnot. And he stood. And I said, this man, you know, like an iron horse he was born on, you know. The thick is it. But a very nice man, he was honest. And we used to do various things on the did maintenance in the town, and there was nothing to do. We didn't even go around. And we're in this old village, and we're billeted in houses. And this day, he came down and did maintenance in the morning, and he came down and said, oh, look, lads, pack up at lunchtime, and nothing to do in the afternoon, so we'll have to mow up and enter the houses. And that's when this bomber came over, there were three bombers. You knew them, Jim, you can hear them, but you couldn't see them. And I think we all said at the same time, these bombers are lost. They were coming back, and they just dropped their bombs anywhere. And the only bomb that took the village would have done any damage was a dead bomb. And they fell inside this woman's house, but it didn't go off. So they had to get the RE's up to move the bomb away, people to come and get the bomb away. And then after the helicopter, the squad leader came up and he said, well, look, lads, that was your first enemy attack on us. He said, and he took us to the bomb and he gave us a drink on it. Now that was never an enemy attack on us. I mean, these people were coming back and jettisoned the bombs anyway. They didn't know who, but he thought they'd come out to bomb us.
And what about you? By then, what were you doing in the squad? What was your job?
Squad, I was just a member of the what we call echelons. You know, went on schemes and we were just something about our feet and lorrying. We were to do maintenance or whatever wanted us to do. You know.
So what type of maintenance would you do on a Crusader?
Oh, well, the gunners had to look after their guns and clean their guns, and the divers did the maintenance on the vehicles. And the vessel made them do the course.
So you weren't tanker, you weren't a trained driver of wireless operator or gunner or anything at the time? You were just extra personnel?
That's at that time, yeah. Because, you see, they couldn't train until they got the vehicle, and I was never on a tank at that time. So this went on for quite a bit, and then, as I say, we went for a transfer when I got promoted.
So you were with them about a year, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or longer, a year and a bit.
Wouldn't it? I'll be about a year, I'd say. Yeah. And because we went. Major was up at Cratchit for. We thought we'd go a lot quicker. We were 8 or 9 weeks here, 12 weeks.
So you're probably with the Gloucesters until about October then.
Yeah.
So October 41.
Mm-hmm.
And what about your reception at Catterick? Because
the school leader welcomed us. When we went in, he said, "Ah, 2 volunteers better than 10 pressed men. So you're going to leave tonight." He didn't think we should be up. The corporal and the corporal said, "You can't go the next morning." So we went away next morning. We went home and I had 14 days leave we had. And then we came back and they were there for a week or two. Oh, why? Because we thought we were never going away. And all we would do was go down to Sandy's home and swine and blazing about. You've no even job because we said you've already done your job. And then we've got another week's leave. That's when I went down to the Newmarket again. This is gone, then he came back up again. And just shortly after that, then, as I said, we were told that he got up and we're going to Sandy's home. Got a tropical kit issued to us and then away next morning.
What did you think of the tropical kit?
Well, pith helmet, I thought it was a waste of time. I never seen it, but we never used the pith helmet, so you got there. And the kit, your trousers, all of them. We got them all off the ground, of course, the wogs done it for us, and the obviously the works.
So then you went out aboard the Orontes, I believe, around about January 41.
Yeah.
What do you remember of the trip out on the Orontes?
Well, we were very overladen. We had work job every day, sometimes twice a day.
Taking the overladen bit, how crowded was it? What were conditions like on the mess decks?
Terrible. Terrible. We were under the long tables, and I believe we got 18 either side, and your hammocks was above the tables. So we sat and it was underwater because there were no windows in it. It was underwater level because we were like, we might say, God, it's the appeal of the hell, I said, it comes out here. the conditions were terrible. But after about.
What about the food?
The food, well, only to start with then, we got Cape Cod, it was coming out of here, so apparently that's the things that they could keep stored very well, but all the food was terrible on the boat.
Were you seasick at all?
No, I was very, very fortunate. I smoked heavy at that time too. Very, very fortunate because one man used to go up every day for the food for the 18, you know, the two of them in Bangkok. One lad came over to the tree and he just dropped the tree off and sucked all over the place. And half of them, I know they're about it, half of them stayed in the toilets from morning till night. So they couldn't move.
What state were their heads in then, the toilets?
I mean, the only thing that affected me was I wasn't smoking as much as I was normally smoking. But I was eating all right, but the other one was sick. And then the trees were in the heck of a mess, getting them clean, weren't they? And the bags of salt water, and you've got salt water soap when you're trying to give yourself a shower, you know, you couldn't get a lather with this stuff on top of your hands one day. But plenty of salt water there for baths.
And what about the boat drills?
The boat drill was every day, two or three times a day, and then the only thing they allowed you to do, and we have a funny story here, was play tambola.
Hang on, what about, before, I'll come to Tom, what about the boat drill? I mean, how did it work? I mean, because if the boat was overcrowded, was there enough boats for everyone?
No, they took us to it and it was a raft. And they said, no, there's no enough boat, this is your raft, so you have to be in a certain position. And anything you want to do, make this way as fast as you could through that raft. You know, all the other boats, when they were doing it, all the boats, so, you know, ladies go away, the nurses and ATS girls from across the world. It was overcrowded. So he said, this is your raft. We're going to much hope I can't agree with that. I said, there'll be enough room for you. And you get back again, and you may be sitting down and again for the and I think we go again. And you're up. And they say, that's not very good. They give you the time. You say, I want it faster than them. Okay, you can walk around here, you're going safely. So, one day we're going to come to that and I and we're going to run up the stairs, because we were going to run up the stairs to get to the deck. And this pay off system, the top, see, you can't come up here. He says, I've bumped off here. He says, this place is, you can't, it's not possible. In other words, you have to go back and look for another passageway. But my mate in front of me, right across, the pay off system went up. He said, come back. Let it through. He said, I told you, I've bumped off here. He said, I bet. He said, I've got that plank set through across the hall. He said, where did you get your plank? He said, the same place as you got them done. But the pay off gave me to be laughing. I thought you were going for a high jump, let us go then. Often it was tantal, you were just sitting, you got halfway through the bingo game, you know what I mean? And you're going, it's getting better, you're the joke. And then going for a loan.
Was it just bingo, or was the gambling as well, crown and anchor and things?
The sailors tried to get in the crown and anchor, but we were told to keep well away from them, because they were far out of these boys. No, we just played the bingo. What was it called at that time?
Housey. Did you enjoy the game? I mean, it wasn't as common outside the army as it is now, a bingo, is it?
Well, of course it's the only thing, but it didn't really, other than Britain, sleep. But, once we left...
Who would run the games? Because it was quite a profit. I mean, it wasn't like the Crown and Anchor boards, but it was quite a profitable thing to run, the bingo.
Yeah, I think, you know, the tunnel. Somebody ran it from
So it wasn't run amongst yourselves within the company or a squadron or.
It may have been, I can't remember. We were always playing it anyway. And the sailors used to try and get us into their deck to take care of the screw and anchor, but we were well warned with them. And then when we crossed, you know, we stopped at Freetown. But we weren't allowed to shoot at Freetown. But the young. latest to it, and they tried to sell us these mangoes. Now, I've never seen a mango before, but we're warned not to take any them because these natives were very, very highly infected with disease, and whatnot, and the fruit was very clean. So some are slightly about them, but the sailors were leaving the hoses, getting away. And that's where that young lad, or a boy actually, when he showed up, Diphragnestitanus. This was the Navy boys during the war, and it was me from the bits as they took over, you know. And they used to hell yeah, but this is down. I get them, but then, of course, when they go out, it's just going slow. They came up and put them in their mouth. And the lads used to put pennies on the silver paper and all that, and they come up for me. But we're not allowed to take the fruit, and we're not allowed to show it. I mean, just the most particular water in the world. And then we went down into with the convoy split up then. Some went up to Port Elizabeth, and we went into Cape Town. And in Cape Town, the best reception I've ever had, we came off, went up to Route Max Norne, departed the Irish for an afternoon, after night, after 10 o'clock at night. And when the first day we came in the afternoon, there was this man at the gate, and a big line of cars. And he said, would you like this lady to be your hostess for you here for the few days you're here? And there's this woman in the car, which you know from Scotland, not Grand Army. And he, her man, was a surgeon and a Scotsman. And we all seen her once that night. She took us right home to her house. And it was lovely, we lived in a lovely house. We met him. And she took us back at night in the car. And she said, you come and collect us at one day. And she took us here. All around the world, went up to Table Mountain. And she took us to a small place up far up the coast. They were very good to us. And one night we said we would walk back and go right to see about the captain going through, so fine. And we stopped at this place standing at the shop entrance back to the shop. And we said, let me come here, sir. So we said, come on. So we went in and made a lovely meal. And wine, fruit, everything. We said, well, they said, don't pay any for this, but how do you think? They said, oh, the farmers on the road. The shell was stuffed out for 2 or 3 days, practically nothing. So, and then everyone from that ship got 50 CTC cigarettes. And they said, what is CTC? This was from Cape to Cairo. Everyone looked at it, they've got a marvelous reception. We heard afterwards that the New Zealanders had arrived and got there after us and got stopped out. And I think the apartment, well, that's true, I don't know.
And what about the next leg of the trip? Still on the Orontes?
Mm-hmm, yeah. And we went up the Red Sea to Dufrik, and then I went across to the Far East. So
you went up the canal, or you landed at Dufrik?
Dufrik. And then on a train, from the train up to Cairo.
And what were your first impressions on landing at Port Dufrik of an Arab?
First thing I see, the men working, unloading a boat and laden, unloading a boat, the boy's whips in the hand. He said, what the hell's going on? He said, oh, he says, these are boys that put on a wee bit and they're in charge. He said, and some of them instead of helping their mates, they want to be more like a white man. You know? And he said, there's something very cruel to their own people. They were cutting the whips, they were all hitting boys, they were all with bags in their hand, they'd come in boats. But the first time I'd seen her, and then we went on board the train to right up to Cairo, and we were waiting for them, and the sound was bloody horrible. Looked out the window, and not a thing to be seen, but this man's driver taking the sun, following me up to Cairo.
And what were your impressions of the country?
The country itself? Well, as I said, I've never been out of England. When I went down to Cardiff, the first time out of Scotland. But I was quite happy when we got to Cairo. We went to Abbasiyah Barracks and were there for about 3 weeks before